All right, welcome back everyone to the Deep Dive. So today we're diving headfirst into something I think is really going to resonate with a lot of you, especially for, well, really anyone trying to wrap their heads around how alimony works in Florida. And for that, well, we've got to go all the way back to 1992 in a pretty pivotal case, Pim v. Pim.
Absolutely. This is a big one. It really set the stage for how we look at alimony modifications, especially, you know, when retirement enters the equation. And for law students, well, let me tell you, understanding the ins and outs of Pim v. Pim, that's like essential knowledge.
It is. And it's about more than just, you know, knowing the outcome. It's about understanding the reasoning, the factors the court laid out, and how that continues to shape alimony decisions even today.
Exactly. So, you know, the big question at the heart of Pim v. Pim is this. Can someone who's paying alimony, can they use their voluntary retirement as a valid reason to try to change those payments? Like, is that a substantial change in circumstances, legally speaking?
Right, right. Because obviously life changes after divorce, people age, circumstances shift. But does that automatically mean financial obligations should change too?
That's the crux of it. And the answer, as we'll see, is it depends. The court said yes, retirement can be a factor, a big one even. But there are a lot of caveats, a whole bunch of conditions that have to be carefully considered. It's not just a get out of alimony free card.
Okay, so to really grasp this, I think it's helpful to get into the specifics of the Pim situation, like what actually led to this whole legal battle.
Definitely. So we've got Maurice and Carolyn Pim. They were married for quite a while, almost 30 years, and then divorced back in 1975. As part of that divorce, Maurice agreed to pay Carolyn permanent alimony.
Okay, so far so good. A pretty standard arrangement, especially back then.
Right, but fast forward to 1988, Maurice is nearing 65, thinking about retiring. And, you know, like many people in his position, he wants to stop those alimony payments.
Makes sense. You'd think retiring would be a pretty clear-cut change in circumstances, right?
Well, you'd think so, but it wasn't that simple. In fact, Carolyn, on her end, she actually filed a counterpetition asking for an increase in alimony.
Wow. Okay, so things are already getting complicated. Why was she seeking an increase?
Well, it's important to note that while Carolyn had been a homemaker during their marriage, she had also inherited some assets and sold off some property after the divorce. So there's already this question of, you know, what are her needs? What are her resources?
Right, right. That makes sense. So what happened at the trial court level? How did they initially rule on Maurice's request to modify alimony based on his retirement plans?
Interestingly, they actually sided with Carolyn and denied Maurice's request. They cited a previous case, Ward v. Ward, which basically had this pretty hardline stance that voluntary retirement wasn't a good enough reason to change alimony.
Huh. So that older case really influenced their thinking. But then what? How did it end up at the Florida Supreme Court?
Well, Maurice appealed, of course, and the appellate court actually overturned the trial court's decision. They disagreed with that strict interpretation of Ward v. Ward, and this conflict, this difference of opinion, is what ultimately pushed the issue up to the Florida Supreme Court.
Which is where it gets really interesting, because they had to answer this super specific but crucial question. Can someone's decision to retire at 65 or older, can that, in and of itself, be a substantial change in circumstances for modifying alimony?
Exactly. And their answer, which really set a precedent, was yes.
That's a huge shift from that earlier, like, really rigid interpretation.
It is. And I think for a lot of people, it's a pretty intuitive decision, right? Like, retirement, especially around 65, that's not just some random whim. It's a pretty normal, expected life stage.
Right. Like, it's not the same as just quitting your job because you feel like it. There's this societal understanding that, yeah, people retire, and it's generally accepted.
Exactly. And that's where the court was coming from. They acknowledged that this whole no modification for voluntary acts rule, it just didn't really make sense when applied to retirement, especially in the context of alimony, which is meant to be, you know, fair and equitable.
So they moved away from that rigid rule, but they didn't just swing the pendulum completely in the other direction and say, okay, anyone who retires can automatically change their alimony. They created a more nuanced approach, right?
Right, exactly. They established what's become known as the Pim test, which is a multi-factor test that courts now use to really dig into the specifics of each case where retirement and alimony modification are at play.
Okay, so let's break down this test. What are the factors that courts are supposed to consider when they're trying to figure out if someone's retirement is a legitimate reason to change alimony?
Absolutely. There are seven of them. And understanding these factors is key for anyone, you know, whether you're a legal professional or just someone going through a divorce.
All right. Hit us with factor number one.
Factor number one is the payer's age. So how old is the person who's paying the alimony? The court, obviously, they were focusing on that traditional retirement age, around 65, so that's the starting point, but it's not the only thing they consider.
Makes sense. What about their health?
Right, that's factor number two, the payer's health. If someone is retiring due to, let's say, some serious health issues, well, that obviously adds a lot of weight to their argument for modifying alimony.
I mean, you can't really expect someone to keep working if they're physically unable to,
Yeah.
right? What's the next factor?
The third one gets into the payer's motivation for retiring. Here, the court is really trying to distinguish between someone who's legitimately retiring because they've planned for it, they're at that stage of life, versus someone who's maybe trying to use retirement as a way to get out of paying alimony.
Ah, so it's about intent. Like, were they already planning to retire anyway, or does it seem like a strategic move just to lower their alimony payments?
Exactly, and the courts will look closely at the evidence here. It's not just enough to say, I'm retired, so now I shouldn't have to pay. They'll want to see if the retirement was genuinely in the works.
Okay, makes sense. What's next?
Factor number four looks at the type of work the payer was doing. So, what was their occupation? This is because, as we all know, different professions have different norms and expectations around retirement.
Right, and that leads right into factor number five, which is the normal retirement age for that specific occupation.
You got it. The court even gave some examples, like someone in a physically demanding job, a construction worker, for instance, might reasonably retire earlier than someone in, say, a desk job.
Yeah, like a CEO or something. That makes total sense. So we've covered the payer side of things. What about the person receiving the alimony?
Right, so now we shift gears to the recipient, and factor number six looks at their needs. This means assessing what their essential financial requirements are. What do they need to maintain a reasonable standard of living after the divorce?
And I imagine this is where things can get pretty complex, right? Because needs can be subjective.
Absolutely. It's not a simple calculation. Courts have to look at the whole picture, things like housing, health care, basic living expenses, and of course, how those needs might have changed since the original alimony agreement was established.
Right, because someone's needs might increase or decrease over time for all sorts of reasons.
Exactly. And then the final factor, number seven, considers the impact that stopping or reducing alimony would have on the recipient.
So, if the payments were to change, would that put the recipient in a tough spot financially? Would it significantly lower their standard of living?
Precisely. This is where the court's emphasis on preventing impoverishment really comes in. They wanted to make sure that even if someone's retirement was deemed legitimate, it wouldn't leave their ex-spouse, the person who's been relying on that alimony, in a dire financial situation.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. It's all about finding a balance, isn't it? Trying to be fair to both sides.
It is. It's about striking that equitable balance. And I think one thing that's really crucial to remember is that this seven-factor test, it's not like a rigid formula. It's more of a guiding framework.
So it's not just a checklist. It's about looking at the entire
Right.
context and using these factors to guide the decision-making process. That makes it much more flexible, which I think is really important because every divorce, every situation, it's unique.
Exactly. And the court made that very clear in PIM. They wanted to move away from these hard and fast rules and instead empower judges to look at all the individual circumstances and make a decision that was fair and just, taking into account this big life change of retirement.
Absolutely. And that example we were talking about earlier about how a construction worker might reasonably retire earlier than a CEO, that really highlights why having this kind of flexibility is so important, right? Because there's no single retirement age that applies to everyone.
No, not at all. And even if the court decides that, yeah, the retirement is legitimate, like it meets the criteria of those seven factors, there's still this really important caveat. The modification, any changes to the alimony, they cannot impoverish the ex-spouse. That's a key protection built into this whole framework.
Okay, so just to really emphasize that point, even if the court says, yes, your retirement is a valid reason to adjust the alimony, they still can't make a change that would leave the recipient struggling to make ends meet.
Exactly. And that's what makes this whole area so tricky, right? It's this constant balancing act. You have one person who wants to move on to this next phase of life, retire, reduce their financial obligations. And then you have the other person who's relied on that support, and their financial stability could be seriously impacted by any changes.
Right. It's definitely not a simple equation. Now, there's another really important distinction that the court made in PIM that I think is crucial to point out, especially for our law student listeners. This whole framework, this seven-factor test for evaluating retirement as a change in circumstances, it applies specifically to alimony. It does not apply to child support obligations.
Right, right. They drew a clear line there. And the reasoning behind that is, well, the needs of children are generally seen as taking priority over a parent's desire to retire, even if that retirement is perfectly valid and understandable.
That makes sense. The court was basically saying that a parent's obligation to financially support their children, that doesn't just disappear when they retire.
Exactly. And it highlights this fundamental difference in the nature of those two types of obligations, alimony and child support. They're treated differently under the law.
Okay, so going back to the PIM decision itself, what were some of the key points that Justice Harding made in his opinion? Like, what was the logic behind the court's ruling?
One of the big things Justice Harding emphasized was that this whole idea of 65 being a traditional retirement age, it's not arbitrary. He pointed to things like Social Security benefits and the tax code, all these established societal and governmental structures that recognize this age as a significant transition point in life.
So it wasn't just the court saying, oh, 65 sounds like a good age to retire, so let's use that.
Yeah.
It was grounded in these broader societal norms and practices.
Exactly. And I think that's really important because it helps explain why the court treated retirement differently from, let's say, someone just choosing to switch jobs. It wasn't just a random personal decision. Mm-hmm. It was tied to these established societal expectations.
Right. And that distinction is what allowed them to say, okay, we need to look at retirement differently when we're considering alimony modifications.
Exactly. But there was also this really important warning that Justice Harding issued. And it's a quote that I think really captures the heart of what the court was trying to do. He said, and I'm quoting here, no unilateral retirement if it plunges ex-spouse into poverty.
Wow. Yeah, that's a really powerful statement. It gets right to that idea of balance, right? Like the court is saying, yes, retirement can be a valid reason to change alimony, but not if it's going to create a hardship for the other person.
Right, right. The court wasn't giving anyone a free pass. They were trying to create a framework that was fair to both sides.
So bring it back to Carolyn Pym's situation. How did the court apply this new framework to her case specifically?
Well, the Supreme Court ended up sending her case back to the trial court to be reevaluated under this new 7-factor test. They didn't make a final decision on whether Maurice could modify his alimony or not. But they did highlight some important things about Carolyn's financial situation.
Like what?
Well, they specifically pointed out that Carolyn had acquired some assets through inheritance and also by selling off some property that she and Maurice jointly owned after the divorce.
Oh, okay. So she wasn't completely without resources.
Exactly. And this is where that idea of analyzing existing resources comes in. It's a key part of that 6th factor, you know, the recipient's needs. The court was basically saying that when the trial court reassesses Carolyn's needs, they need to take into account the financial resources that she already has.
So they weren't saying she wouldn't get alimony anymore, but those assets would definitely be factored into the decision about how much support she would continue to receive.
Exactly. And it shows how nuanced these decisions can be. It's not just black and white, like retirement equals no alimony. It's about looking at the whole financial picture.
Right, right. That makes sense. So zooming out a bit, for all of our legal eagles out there, what are some of the key takeaways from PIM v. PIM? Like, what should lawyers and really anyone involved in a divorce, what should they keep in mind because of this case?
Well, I think for lawyers who are drafting divorce agreements, PIM really emphasizes how important it is to be proactive and think about those potential future scenarios, especially retirement. If you can address those things up front, in the original agreement, it can save a lot of headaches and legal battles down the road.
So like having clear language in the agreement about what happens to alimony if one spouse retires.
Exactly. Like what are the expectations? What are the factors that will be considered if someone seeks a modification? Laying that groundwork from the start can be hugely beneficial.
That's a really good point. What about for lawyers who are actually representing clients in these alimony modification cases, especially those involving retirement?
Well, if you're representing the spouse who's seeking to retire and modify their alimony obligations, you really need to be prepared to present solid evidence for each of those 7 PIM factors.
So like documentation of their age, health, proof of genuine retirement plans, all of that.
Absolutely. And you'll need to be able to show what the normal retirement age is for their specific profession. This might involve expert testimony, industry data, things like that.
Makes sense. What about if you're on the other side, representing the spouse who's receiving alimony?
In that case, your focus needs to be on really digging deep into their client's needs. Like, what are their actual essential expenses?
Mm-hmm.
How would a change in alimony affect their financial well-being?
It's like meticulously documenting their living costs, their projected expenses, everything.
Exactly. And you'll also want to closely examine the finances of the spouse who's seeking to retire. Like, what are their assets? What's their retirement income going to look like? It's all about understanding the full financial impact.
And just to add to that, it's crucial to remember that reaching retirement age doesn't automatically guarantee an alimony modification under PIM. You brought up that really interesting case from 2022 where the court denied a request for modification even though the person had retired, and it was all because they had substantial savings, like close to $2 million.
Right. That case really drives home the point that PIM isn't a magic formula. It's a framework for analysis. And the outcome, the decision about whether or not to modify alimony, it's always going to depend on the specific facts of each individual case.
Yeah, it's a case-by-case thing. So to sum it all up, PIM v. PIM, it really did change the legal landscape here in Florida when it comes to alimony and retirement. It shifted the courts away from that rigid, like, no modification for voluntary acts approach and towards a much more nuanced, comprehensive way of looking at these situations.
Absolutely. It was a huge step toward a more equitable approach, recognizing that people age, life circumstances change, and the law needs to adapt to those realities. And I think what makes PIM so interesting, even all these years later, is that it forces us to think about how these fundamental principles, how they'll continue to be applied as society changes, as our understanding of retirement evolves.
Right, right. Like, what happens as people work longer or maybe retire earlier? How will PIM be interpreted in those situations? It's something for everyone to really think about.
Definitely food for thought. And for anyone who's really interested in digging even deeper, well, there are a few other areas you might want to explore, like how do courts handle cases where someone loses their job involuntarily as opposed to retiring?
Yeah, that's a whole other can of worms, isn't it?
It is. And you could also look into the distinctions between temporary and permanent alimony and, of course, the Florida statutes that govern alimony modifications in general.
All really interesting stuff. But for now, we'll wrap up our deep dive into the world of PIM v. PIM. Thanks for joining us, everyone, and we'll catch you next time.